call the April 18th, 2019 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Ms. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Harder. Mr. McMahon.
Present.
Mr. Stanton.
Also present.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing. Ms. Russell. Mr. Tuohy.
Here.
I am here. Ms. Lowe.
Here.
We have seven. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Mr. Zenner, were there any modifications to the agenda?
No, there have not been, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Second by Mr. McMahon. Can I get thumbs up on approval? Unanimous. Thank you. Everyone should have received a copy of the April 4th, 2019 meeting minutes. Were there any additions or changes to the minutes? Mr. Stanton.
I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton.
Second.
Second by Mr. Strodman. Can I get a thumbs up approval of the minutes? Thank you. Our first item of business is a withdrawn item. Case 31-2019, a request by the City of Columbia to amend Chapter 29, Sections 29-1.11, definitions, and 29-3.3 use-specific standards of the City Code relating to the revision of the definitions for hotel and bed and breakfast, creation of definitions for short-term rental and transient guest, and creation of new use-specific standards governing the establishment and operation of a short-term rental inside the city's corporate limits. This item was introduced at the December 20th, 2018 meeting, continued to the March 7th, 2019 meeting, and continued again to the April 18th, 2019 meeting. The applicant is requesting withdrawal of this application with the intent to re-advertise and submit at a later date. Mr. Zenner, are there any comments on this item?
No, other than as you see here on your screens, we have gone through a tremendous amount of time as it relates to this particular topic, beginning all the way back in late November of 2018. Planning Commission's last work session on this item on March 21st identified a desire to do additional work as it related to the proposed revisions or the proposed regulatory standards. And as a result of that conclusion on the 21st, and in accordance generally with our provisions that we apply to other requests that are seeking to be delayed greater than 2 months from the date of its original introduction, the city is requesting that this item be withdrawn from public hearing consideration at this point from the Planning Commission's agenda in order to allow us to reset with a revised draft ordinance and then begin the public engagement process over and fresh at that point. As we are aware with our current workload that we are engaged in right now, this item was not going to be reappearing on the Commission's agenda until the earliest at the either end of May or possibly the beginning of June. And as a result of that, we do not want to just continue to indefinitely move and continue the hearing out and out and out. We are well aware of the public's comments. We have received additional public comments as a result of preparing this agenda and requesting this withdrawal. Those comments will be provided to the Commission when we re-engage with discussion. Our listserv that we have developed as a result of our prior meetings will continue to be used as a means of notifying those that are interested in this topic, as well as we will update the website that is part of the Community Developments page on the City's website as new information becomes available so people have access to that. But at this point, we believe that it is in the public's best interest to withdraw the item, reintroduce when we are ready to have a discussion on a more solid ordinance that the commissioners are in greater congruence with versus where we're at this point. So we recommend that the commission accept the withdrawal and allow us to move forward with future revisions.
So it's not being withdrawn due to lack of interest, but merely the fact we have too many interesting topics on our work session agenda this year.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say we have a lot of work session topics, but I think it has more to do with the fact that we are now 2 months out from the original advertising of holding a public hearing. And as we continue to further and further delay an actual final public hearing, we do a disservice to those that are actually wanting to be involved and engaged in this, because it becomes further and further from the forefront of their opportunity to interact with. We continue to not be able to get to it due to our workload. I feel it is more appropriate to withdraw the project, re-engage the commission and the staff, and then basically re-engage the public when we're ready to do so. But at this point, we're just not there.
You need any action from the commission to withdraw this?
No. Now, this was a continued to public hearing date. We are requesting that it be withdrawn. There may be members here in the audience that may want to make comment. That is at the discretion of the commission, given that we are requesting the item to be withdrawn. But given the fact that this was a continued to date, you may want to ask if there is anybody in the public that would like to just make any summary comment. But we are not taking any official in-depth public comment, because we have not produced anything in the way of a draft to which one could comment on.
Is anybody in the audience here today to give comment on the short-term rental amendment? I see none.
Then I don't believe there is any further action necessary by the commission. As a withdrawal, we are just informing you that the item is no longer going to be showing on your agenda.
Thank you. In that case, we will move on to subdivisions and design adjustments. Mr. McMahon.
Just real briefly. Mr. Zenner, do you have an approximate month of return for this project?
At this juncture, I would suggest to you that it will probably be the, I'm thinking it's going to be the second meeting in the month of June.
All right, I wanted to get kind of a feel for us and for people in the
because
community.
We need to, and the reason I say the second meeting, not the first, is we need to, I want to
we have a lot of stuff on our plate.
Want to re-engage another item.
That's right.
And we'll probably alternate meetings then if we have to.
But all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, moving on to subdivisions and design adjustments. Case 79-2019, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of T-Vine Enterprises, Inc., for a two-lot final subdivision plat to be known as Tuscany Estates, and a design adjustment requesting relief from the requirement to build a sidewalk alongside Oakland Gravel Road per Section 29-5.1D and Appendix A of the UDC. The 22.02-acre property is zoned R1 and floodplain overlay and is located east of North Teresa Drive, north of Bear Creek, and south of Oakland Gravel Road. This item was tabled at the April 4th, 2019 meeting. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I need to recuse myself.
Thank you, Mr. Tuohy.
Yes, Madam Chair. As you mentioned, this is a two-lot subdivision action for property that is generally zoned R1 and then does include quite a bit of floodplain overlay along the Bear Creek Trail. So I'll go into a little bit more depth on that in a moment, but you can see here on this screen where the purple lines are is generally where that floodplain property is. To the west and north of the property is generally unincorporated Boone County. The city is then generally to the south and east of this property in terms of incorporation. And of course, because this is a subdivision action this evening, this property is within the city limits. I did get a few phone calls to that effect, since it's right on the line. The applicant is also requesting a design adjustment this evening from the subdivision requirements, specifically the provision that would require a sidewalk to be built along the Oakland Gravel Road frontage. Public information, we had a meeting on March the 12th. We sent 30 postcards to adjacent properties. I sent those same properties letters to announce the public hearing. We did table from the last meeting to allow for some technical revisions to the plat. We're still anticipating a few very, very minor technical revisions to this plat that was included in your staff report with a bit more detail on how you might make a motion to include it. And then this case was also advertised on March 19th in the Tribune. So in terms of the subject site, to the south, we've got quite a bit of joint city and county property. So there's the Atkins Memorial Park, which is both city and county. And then just south of that is the Central Missouri Event Center, or most commonly known as the Boone County Fairgrounds. We've then got the Alpha Heart Lewis Elementary School, and then the Norma Smith Park over here in this area. This is where Waco terminates, and then the subject site is here. In the initial mapping, you will have seen the entire piece here was included. During the process, the property was subject to a tract split. So tract splits allow for a subdivision of larger properties for the sale of part of the property. They do not have the same effect as subdivision. So if a tract split piece of property wants to be further divided under the city code, then you have to do a formal subdivision, as we're doing tonight. So the request tonight, of course, is to have two lots, and that's why we're seeing a final minor subdivision for this site. And then here's Oakland Gravel right here. And I'll zoom in a little bit more when we talk about the sidewalk design adjustment request. And just note, point of fact, this here and this here are both county subdivisions. This is the Gregory Heights subdivision right here. Okay, so as I mentioned, the floodplain overlay generally runs all through the Bear Creek property. And as such, it is subject to the city's stream buffer requirements. It's mostly a type 1 stream, but there is some type 2 stream area within here as well. This piece down here, kind of on the south and east, is nearly 40 acres that will remain unplatted through this action. So if any development were to occur on that piece of property, it would be subject to a further subdivision action. Presently, Oakland Gravel Road has adequate right-of-way. The street is classified as a neighborhood collector. The standard is a minimum of 60 feet of right-of-way. Presently, there's 66 feet, so there is adequate road right-of-way should the street be improved. Presently, there is no curb and gutter. It's county-maintained, and there are no current plans in the city's CIP or in the CATSO long-range transportation plan to improve Oakland Gravel presently. The plat dedicates a 20-foot utility easement alongside Oakland Gravel. 10-foot is the minimum requirement. And then it also dedicates a 10-foot trail easement on the north side of the Bear Creek. And I'll talk a little bit more about that here in a moment. But first, I want to get into the design adjustment request. Okay, so despite the fact that this street is unimproved, it is a collector. Neighborhood collectors in the UDC are required to provide a sidewalk with any subdivision new construction activity. So that's in 29.5.1D and Appendix A of the UDC. This is about 1,200 feet in length here across the northern frontage of the property. We've got two different design criteria standards that we look at for unimproved streets. So any typical design adjustment from the subdivision regulations have five criteria that we always look at. So that's 29.5.2B9. You're pretty used to seeing that criteria, and I also included it in the staff report. But for unimproved streets, seeking a design adjustment for the sidewalk, there's four additional criteria that are in that policy resolution. So that's 4806A, and yes, it has been around for about 13 years. So we also include that within our evaluation of whether or not staff thinks the criteria is supported on whether or not you should recommend approval of the waiver from the sidewalk. So after going through those nine review criteria, staff does not support the design adjustment request. The biggest factor here is that really there are no extraordinary site conditions. There are some topographical challenges, I will note, with the tributary to the Bear Creek kind of going through here, where you see this mature tree stand through here. So that is sort of a topographical challenge. But for the most part, this is, you know, a flat area. This is new construction. We don't really see any sort of hardship that's not self-imposed. The applicant noted in the nine questions that they answered as part of the design adjustment worksheet that was provided to you that the cost of building the sidewalk would be in the low $20,000, so I think it was about $22,000, relative to site improvement costs of around $40,000. And so that doesn't include the two houses. Those numbers may not, you know, be known at this point in terms of how much it would cost to construct or what the value to sell those homes might be. But that's not an extraordinary amount to build this sidewalk. In fact, looking at if the applicant were to pursue fee in lieu, and that's a conversation that would be had at the council level, not at the commission level, the cost that the city, if looking at historical numbers of the last 3 years of what we've paid to put sidewalk in, it would be, you know, three times the cost that the applicant can do it. So in that term, while you can certainly consider a financial hardship as one of the nine criteria, we don't really support that at this time. Additionally, there aren't any sidewalks on Oakland Gravel Road or in the vicinity, the exception being that that county subdivision was built after the county put in requirements for sidewalks on more urban-style development neighborhoods. So there are some internal sidewalks to the north and the west, and the subdivision is right over here. Gregory Heights has no sidewalks, and there really aren't any sidewalks on North Oakland Gravel or any of the adjacent roadways. And so we understand that this might feel a little bit like a sidewalk to nowhere. We've heard that before, but certainly sidewalks have to start somewhere in terms of filling in sidewalk gaps throughout our community. Our comprehensive plan, Columbia Imagine, calls for a safe and connected community. We have a Vision Zero plan that calls for zero pedestrian deaths, and so it's really challenging given the criteria in the code, just standard for design adjustments, and then in particular to unimproved streets, asking waiver for sidewalks is just really difficult when looking at those criteria and our comprehensive plans to support variance from our sidewalk requirements. Additionally, this area eventually will hopefully be served by the Bear Creek Trail extension. I will also note, though, that there is no known time frame, cost, or design for this section of the Bear Creek extension. So when or if it happens is not really something that I'm privy to at this point, but eventually it is on the Parks and Rec plan and their 2013 plan. What we do know is that the Bear Creek Trail is anticipated to be connected up to the Missouri Event Center, aka the fairgrounds, sometime in the next 6 to 10 years, or at least that's what the listing is. It's about a $3 million extension. Presently, the Bear Creek Trail terminates at Albert Oakland Park. So with all of that, I just do want to note, and I noted this in the staff report, that we do not show sidewalks on final plats. The plat itself is found with some very, very minor technical corrections to meet the requirements of the subdivision standards. They are providing the trail easement. They are providing the utility easements. There's adequate right-of-way. So the plat is a good plat in terms of meeting our requirements. So at this point, it's up to you and your recommendation, should you see fit, to decide whether or not that design adjustment for the sidewalk meets the nine criteria as presented in the code and in that policy resolution. So should you find and that you agree with the staff that the design adjustment is not appropriate at this time, you can approve the final plat without approving the design adjustment. So what that means for the applicant is that they will need to either pursue fee in lieu with the city council or build the sidewalk prior to being issued any certificates of occupancy on those lots. So that's kind of where it leaves them should you go that route. If you disagree with me, if you think that based upon those nine criteria that it is appropriate to recommend waiver of that sidewalk design adjustment, and then your motion then could be made to reflect that you approve the final plat subject to minor technical corrections and also that you approve the design adjustment. So that was kind of a lot. The applicant is here should you have any questions. And I also would like to note that on the dais we provided some correspondence from Margaret Booker from the public that was provided this afternoon to the staff. And so I wanted to make sure that that was included in the record. And I think Mrs. Booker might also want to speak on this matter tonight as well.
I may point out to you, due to the design adjustment, which is a public hearing, you will need to open the floor for public comments as it relates to that matter. And we would ask then that two votes be taken, one on the public hearing matter of the design adjustment and then one on the final plat.
Thank you, Ms. Bacon. Are there any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bacon, could you return to the oblique photograph that showed the park and the fairgrounds?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. How far south is Atkins Park, approximately?
So this right here is 1,200 feet.
1,200 feet, okay.
Yeah, so if that provides some perspective.
I've got that. Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
Any additional questions for staff? Ms. Bacon, I had one question. Did you say that the county has now adopted sidewalk requirements? So we're not seeing sidewalks in the subdivision directly west because it's older, but the new one north of that does have sidewalks per current county standards.
Correct. And actually, the new site, the newer development to the north of Oakland Gravel is actually under an annexation agreement with the city of Columbia. But the site, the county does have now within their development standards sidewalk requirements for urban development. Any lot that I believe is under 10,000 square feet must have 10,000 square feet or a half an acre has to have sidewalks associated with it, subdivision developments of that nature. The Gregory Heights development, of course, predated that.
Thank you. Mr. Strodeman.
With that in mind, Mr. Zinner, why would the county not require the sidewalks to be along Oakland Gravel?
Well, at the time that Gregory Heights was built, I'm not quite sure what the road design standards were for the county. We have in our regulatory structure, as well as I believe the county does now, a complete street profile. So new road construction within the county of a major street would require sidewalks to be incorporated or multimodal facilities at a minimum. This portion of Oakland Gravel where the gear crank is in Oakland Gravel's alignment has been around for obviously quite some time. So this road network predates most likely updated county regulatory standards. And since the properties that surround Oakland Gravel in this area, we don't have we haven't done a jurisdictional transfer, the implementation of sidewalks with future redevelopment in the city, this is the way that we get them. We get them through our platting of properties that are inside the city's corporate limits. What's to the north may or may not have to give additional road right-of-way, and we may or may not get county required improvements just based on the differences in the way that the two jurisdictions operate for subdivision development.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for staff? I see none. Therefore, we will open up the floor to public comment. As previously, if you're representing in a group, you have 6 minutes to comment. Otherwise, we will allow you 3 minutes for comment. Please give us your name and address for the public record.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. First off, I'd like to start off by saying again, this is roughly 20 acres in size, 22 acres piece of property. We do want to subdivide it into 10-acre tracts, large acreage tracts of this area. Given the floodplain and the surrounding area, we believe that large acres and large acreage tracts in this area are appropriate. And if you go north on Oakland Gravel Road, you'll see some tracts that are in similar size. That are kind of in conjunction with this piece as well. So I would like to correct one thing that Mr. Zinner indicated is the county sidewalk regulations, while they do require internal sidewalks, they don't require external sidewalks along major streets. And so while Gregory Heights is an older subdivision that didn't require any sidewalks at all, the other development out there wouldn't have required, if it was new today, wouldn't require sidewalks along Oakland Gravel either. So anytime that we have in county development, whether it's 10,000 square feet, half acre, or larger, you do not have to do external sidewalks along major roadways that are external to the development. So I think that's rather important. I think, I've been up here many times, and we've often used the term, sidewalks to nowhere. And really, this is a sidewalk that is nowhere. There is no sidewalks adjacent to or around this development along Oakland Gravel Road. The nearest sidewalk on Oakland Gravel Road is much further south. It's 1.8 miles south. You have to go down Oakland Gravel Road past the fairgrounds over Highway 63, and it's on the south side of 63. So there's a substantial distance of area that has no sidewalk before you get to any sidewalk. And of course, when we talk about the Bear Creek Trail and how the residential area could filter down to the Bear Creek Trail and have access to that trail network and then come further south. Well, I think there's a few things to keep in mind on that. In the next 3 to 5 year plan, Parks and Rec intends to get the trail within 2.5 miles of the site. Okay, that's still a long way away. In the 6 to 10 year plan, they hope to get it to the fairgrounds. So if they get it to the fairgrounds, the south side of the fairgrounds, Mr. McMahon, to answer your question, the south side of the fairgrounds to Oakland Gravel and adjacent to this side is still 1.25 miles. So that's still a substantial distance. And so by that time, I think there's other alternative methods that could be achieved to get pedestrian traffic from these neighborhoods down south. We're going to have, at some point, we're going to have the extension of Waco Road. We know it's going to get extended. My client actually owns property over on that side that plans to extend Waco Road in the future, not all the way to 63, but a portion there past Alpha Hart Lewis School. So there's going to be some extension of Waco Road that will certainly have sidewalks associated with it. The residential developments that go with it will have sidewalks with it, but that'll extend it over to Oakland Gravel on the west side. And so I think that there's some alternative locations there. Now, when is, you know, and then again, Parks and Recreation doesn't have any plans on the books at this point to extend north of the fairgrounds, the trail. So we don't know if and when that will ever take place. And then as development probably takes place further going north, if it takes place in the county in 10-acre tracts or 5-acre tracts, you know, of course, we're not going to have sidewalks. It's going to be developed more along the lines of county regulation. And, of course, there's going to be very little, if any, desire or need to extend that trail network. So again, we feel that this is a justified request for the sidewalk variance. You know, I've been before this commission many times on sidewalk variances. I feel that this one is very much justified, given the current location, given the type of development that we're proposing, the limitation of two tracts of land, and we'd really strongly encourage support with that design variance. Again, I'm here to answer any questions that you may have regarding the plat or the design variance. I'm happy to answer any questions on either of those.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Are there any questions for the speaker? I see none.
Thank you.
My name is Deborah Booker. I live at 6395 North Oakland Gravel Road, but I own from 6101 to 6395. So I own everything on the north side of Oakland Gravel Road. I've been in that area since 1966. And there was lots of travel on Oakland Gravel Road past me all the way until alfalfa was put through, and that is not a gravel road. When I moved to Oakland, it was a dirt road. Then it was blacktop, which fell apart. It's now chip and seal. From Gregory Heights east and around the S-curve and north until it connects to alfalfa again, which is what connects Oakland Gravel. The traffic has stopped about 85% because they go around the shorter, better road, better base. They also do not ever have to face the very real flooding that happens in that corner, in that S-curve. You can see on the map right across from this property, a very wooded area. That is one part of Bear Creek's tributary. Across the road, and it's right next to the road, is the big part. I've had it flood up three wires on a six-wire fence that is this high above the roadbed. So I understand about this kind of thing because I've had to clean that fence off. I have no problem in this life with saying I think putting a sidewalk here is foolishness on a chip and seal road that the city, I don't think, wants to take care of. There is no outside, there is no other sidewalk on it. And without having anything, without any connection to Waco and Prathersville Road, I don't see any point in this, frankly, but that's my problem. You all have this in front of you. I can read it to you, but I would be happier to give any kind of answers that I could if you have questions.
Thank you, Ms. Booker. Are there any questions for this speaker? I see none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any additional speakers on this case? Seeing none, I'm going to close public hearing. Commission discussion. Mr. McMahon.
Sure. Okay. Looked past me and said my name. You confused me, Madam Chair. Going back again, Ms. Bacon, could you return to that photo for me, please? And this is not my standard position, what I'm about to say. Looking at where the park is, looking at where the school is, looking at northern and northeastern Columbia's heavily developed areas, maybe not 5 years, 10 years, 15. This is a developed part of Columbia. And I think this is the time to start with sidewalks. I mean, really, when Waco goes through, and it will eventually, you're less than maybe a quarter mile from one end of that property. Alpha Heart is maybe 3/4 of a mile as it exists right now. The park is a half a mile. It looks, from a city planner viewpoint, it looks like it's prepped to go. And we are constantly asked to not build sidewalks or to give variances. And I think in this case, it's problematic to waive the sidewalk.
Other comments? Ms. Bacon, I have another question for you. We recently looked at a proposed development for the site at the end of North Oakland Gravel Road, west of that intersection of North Oakland Gravel and East Alfalfa.
I defer to Mr. Zenner on that.
Okay.
If that's okay.
That is correct, ma'am.
Can you remind me if that development included sidewalks along North Oakland and East Alfalfa?
Yes, it did. However, that project was withdrawn from City Council consideration, and therefore it is not in play. It is actually at this point, as I understand it, being prepared to be presented to the county planning commission for county zoning. And as Mr. Crockett just informed you, exterior roadways would not have sidewalks placed upon them. The interior design of the development, as I understand it, would require interior sidewalks only.
Yes, though the property to the east side of Alfalfa does appear to have been provided with sidewalks. Is that because the homes there face Alfalfa?
No, that I don't know for a fact. However, the property that is north of Oakland Gravel is a more contemporary county subdivision that was built through an annexation, a connection agreement, at a time, I believe, where the county had their sidewalk standards in place. Why Alfalfa has it, because that was an existing exterior street, without knowing the history and what conditions the county may have placed on it, I can't really give you a definitive answer.
There's no sidewalk on Alfalfa.
There is along the east side, north of Oakland Gravel Road.
Oh, okay.
Because at the time that we were looking at the project as it came in, which was referred to as Oakland Crossings, we had discussed with the applicant and their design professionals of utilizing the sidewalk that was on the east of Alfalfa and only then requiring south of Oakland Gravel Road to the intersection of Oakland Gravel and Prathersville extended to have sidewalks. And it was at that time, as part of the discussion of the plan review, that the applicant indicated, no, we just want to keep the sidewalk you'll require us to build along Oakland Gravel and Alfalfa on our side, given the fact that there would have had to have been some type of pedestrian crossing over Alfalfa. They didn't want to go there. So the only thing I could tell you is and I, for the life of me, I can't remember the name of the development immediately to the north. That is a more contemporary development that was built well after the Gregory Heights development. The Willowbrook project, Ms. Bacon indicated, that's Willowbrook to the north.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner.
40 years after.
Just for the record, the comment from the audience was 40 years after. Any additional comments from commission? Seeing none, I want to remind everyone that Mr. Zenner has instructed us to do two votes on this, the first one for the design adjustment and the second one for the final plat. I'd also like to remind the commission that for design adjustments, we like to make the motion in the affirmative. And if we don't agree, you vote no, obviously. Mr. McMahon.
There is no more council discussion or commission discussion. I'm going to make a motion To approve the design adjustment, I will be voting no. Staff can maybe help me a little with the wording of this. Do I truncate to the end?
It would just be that you'd be recommending approval of the design adjustment to section 29.5.1D.
I move that we approve the design adjustment to case 79-2019, the design adjustment being section 29.5.1D, which requires a sidewalk.
Second.
Second by Ms. Burns. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
No.
Mr. Stanton?
No.
Mr. Strodman?
No.
My vote is no. Ms. Lowe?
No.
5-1, motion does not carry.
Thank you. So for the final plat, Mr. Zenner, just for clarification,
as Ms. Bacon pointed out, you can recommend approval of the final plat. It is technically compliant, less minor technical corrections. A recommendation of approval would obligate the applicant at the time of building permitting to show installation of the sidewalk, unless otherwise waived by City Council through either an overriding of your recommendation to deny the requested design adjustment or through a payment in lieu of as an available option.
So what the statement that's identified in the recommendation, the second recommendation in the...
The alternative.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Mr. Stanton?
I'd like to make a motion, ma'am.
Thank you.
As it relates to case 79-2019, I move to the approval of Tuscany Estates final plat subject to minor technical corrections.
Second.
With the understanding that a sidewalk, should we include the?
No, you do not need
redundant.
To. That's
okay.
Redundant.
Yeah,
that was for their edification.
Thank you. And a second was from?
Mr. McMahon.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you.
We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion? Seeing none, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
7-0, motion carries.
Thank you. 6.
6-0, motion carries.
Recommendations will be forwarded to City Council. Moving on to public hearings. Our first public hearing is case 81-2019. A request by a civil group on behalf of Cherry Hill Dental Associates, LLC, for a major amendment to the Gadbois Professional Offices PD plan. The applicant is requesting revisions to the permitted signage on the PD plan and the uses within the statement of intent. Specifically, the applicant is wishing to permit a restaurant within the building that serves alcohol by the beverage, and they wish to permit additional wall signage for this tenant. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So as you can see from the map here in the slide, the property is located on the north side of Nifong at Santiago and south of Diego. The property is 1.35 acres. Public notice, real quick, the public info meeting was held on 3/12. There were 12 postcards sent to surrounding property owners. No one attended the meeting except for the applicant's agent. It was advertised on the 2nd of April, and then the same 12 property owners were sent letters for notice. So this, a little bit of background on this. It was originally the second lot, basically, of the Premier Bank Bethel Banking Center CP plan, which was approved in 2006. This aerial photo here is the Bethel Banking Center, which is now First State Community Bank. And the subject lot was actually designated as a lot for future development on that plan. But there, because they were approved together, the statement of intent was in effect for both lots, essentially. So then in late 2017, you guys saw the Gadboy Professional Offices PD plan that was approved in December. However, at that time, they did not amend the 2006 statement of intent. So that is technically still in effect, and that's why we're here tonight, at least one reason why we're here tonight. So specifically, the 2006 statement of intent does not permit alcohol sales in any manner. I forget exactly what it said now. But it does permit restaurants, and the reason for the request is actually the owners of the property have been approached by a restaurant as a prospective tenant for their first floor space in their new building. So they are seeking that revision in the statement of intent to accommodate the restaurant, which indicated that alcohol sales by the beverage are a large component of their business model. So. Typically, alcohol sales are considered a customary accessory use with any restaurant. So that is to say, a restaurant would typically be allowed to sell alcohol by the beverage, given they have the proper state license and everything, in any zone where that restaurant is allowed to operate. In this case, or actually in the MN, sorry, I'm reading ahead of myself and losing my spot. Freestanding bars and nightclubs, however, are not permitted in the existing statement of intent. And also the MN, which is what's proposed to be the replacement for the statement of intent, we'll get to in a minute, only allows them by conditional use permit. So there's a further approval process before anything like that would be allowed to operate in that location. So. The other aspect to this request is to permit additional wall sign on the east facade. It is actually proposed to substitute for the freestanding signage. I got some little graphics here. Ostensibly, this is where the signage would go, anywhere in those two areas. And then that sign there on this rendering would actually be removed in place of it. So if for whatever reason the restaurant doesn't come through at the end, this monument sign is I assume to remain as long as the owner sees that is appropriate. But in the event that the restaurant goes in place, they would like to have a sign on the wall of the building, and it kind of as a alternative, they would like to remove the monument sign in its place. So that's one thing. Oh, and just real quick, the freestanding sign there in the red is approved on the PD plan. It is approved to have 48 square feet of advertising space on either side. And I just wanted to point that out because the proposed alternative would only be 48 square feet on one side of the building, on the east side of that building. So overall, the alternative signage would amount to a reduction in the signage across the site by 48 feet. The total wall signage would total 112 square feet. This Cherry Hill Dental signage here is 64 square feet. And so that total is where that comes from, the 64 plus the 48 they're proposing. That is roughly 4% of the surface area of the facade, and typically 15% of the facade of any commercial building would be allowed to have signage on it based on kind of the strip mall scenario where you have numerous uses in a single structure. Each would be allowed a sign up to the 15% of the facade. So the existing wall signage there, the Cherry Hill Dental signage, was actually relocated on the 2017 PD plan. That's actually their Nifong Boulevard allotment. They, as you can see, they have a kind of a glass wall on the front of the building, and also the arrangement of Nifong and their property doesn't allow for much visibility on the front of the building. Basically, when you see the front of their building, you are in front of the building and not down the street at all. So they wanted those signs to be on the sides of the structure. And so that was approved. So that's how we ended up there. However, at that time, it was limited to the 64 square feet. So they're currently at their maximum, and that's why we need this revision to allow that extra 48 square feet. So given that this is an overall reduction in the site signage, staff finds the alternative signage appropriate. And as I said, they are proposing all permitted uses within the MN district as an alternative to the existing statement of intent. So given the similarity of those uses in the existing statement of intent and the restrictions on bars and nightclubs, staff views the statement of intent revision as reasonable also. So our recommendation would be to approve the PD plan and the statement of intent amendments. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Given that, we will open up the floor for public comment. You can give us your name and address for the public record.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, my name is Kevin Murphy with A Civil Group, offices at 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. I think the request is, just to simplify it, we're just asking for some leeway in placing the signages to hopefully appease a good tenant in the building. It would be to allow them a wall sign, would allow a reduction, or would create a reduction in the overall area that we're already approved to have. If not, then we would just go what we've been previously approved with. As far as the changing of the statement of intent, again, staff agrees with it. Any alcohol sales would be within and contained within the restaurant. It would be no packaged liquor to go or anything like that. So much like a Addison's or Pasta Factory or something of that nature. But so if you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Murphy? I see none. Thank you. Oh, Mr. Stanton.
Oh, I'd like to make a motion, ma'am.
Oh, no questions. any other comments from the public? Seeing none, we will close the public comment period. You're getting ahead of yourself. Commission discussion. Mr. Stanton.
As it relates to case 81-2019, I move to approve the PD plan and the modifications to the statement of intent amendments.
Second.
Second from Mr. McMahon. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. May we have roll call, please,
yes.
Ms. Burns.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodeman.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
7-0 motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. Our second public hearing for the evening is case 88-2019, a request by Crockett Engineering Consultants on behalf of Partnership for Kelly Farms of Columbia LP for a major amendment to the existing PD development plan known as Kelly Farms to increase monument signage height, an area from the permitted 4-foot height and 16 square foot area per sign, and to revise driveway locations for the multifamily lot. The 43-acre property is located on the east side of Cinnamon Hill Lane, approximately 1,100 feet north of Stadium Boulevard. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may. As we have pointed out, this is the Kelly Farms project on Cinnamon Hill Lane, just north of our hotel site that is down to the south and to the east of US 63 by our water tower. 43 acres total. We have a combination of multifamily residential development as well as single family development inside this planned district. And the purpose for this amendment is for signage revision. Public information meeting was held on 3/26 of this year, and 17 postcards were sent out. On 4/2, we advertised, and 17 property owner letters were also distributed at the same time.
This is the aerial oblique of the site prior to the development occurring. Almost the entire project is currently built out at this point, with the exception of the single family, which is in the northeast corner of the highlighted area. And the signage amendment that is being proposed this evening really is more applicable to the multifamily development south of the extension of Cinnamon Hill Lane, which runs all the way to the eastern boundary of the property, generally in this particular area. We have a small parcel that comes up where our water tank site is and then comes directly across. Upper area here that's cleared is where the single family was. All of the buffer was retained, and all of the multifamily and its corresponding improvements are to the southwest of the site itself. So what this application is seeking to do is increase and modify the total number of signs that were allowed on the property through the original plan district plan approval, as well as make a site plan modification to relocate driveways that were originally shown on the approved development plan that through the process of site development and actual construction were adjusted in order to increase site visibility. Based on recommendations and coordinated efforts with our traffic engineering division. And that's the lesser of the two issues, really. It was more of a cleanup issue as we took through this amendment for signage. The area of the signs that are on this property are currently less than that what would be normally allowed. And for the purposes of comparison, as the staff report lays out, and as we utilize normally as a measuring stick whenever we're dealing with plan development, we look at what would the comparable base zoning district be and what would that allowable signage allow. This is the most comparable base zoning district would be RMF, and it would allow basically signage as it relates to the roadway classifications that this particular development has and is dealt with. US 63 along its western boundary is actually an interstate freeway, and therefore it is almost it's the highest street standard that it is the highest street standard that we have and does afford the largest amount of signage within our sign code. So given that that location exists, the site would be allowed two signs that are 12 feet high with 128 total square feet of signage on each. So currently the PD plan permits three signs but restricts them to 4 feet and a total of 16 square feet in area. Hence our first bullet point here. The area of signage allowed on this site is significantly less than the maximum when we look at a comparable analysis. The total area increases, the total sign area that would be permitted on this site would increase ever so slightly if this amendment is approved. And as outlined within the staff report at the end of page one, you will notice those comparisons. We basically go 21 square feet and 34 square feet for our freestanding signs and the total area permitted. The three allowed signs has a total of 48 square feet right now. The requested signage would end up with, if approved, and it would only be two, would be 55 square feet. So the difference between 55 and 48 is what we're talking about as the small amount. Total number of signs goes from three to two, as I just pointed out, so we are reducing signage on the site. They have eliminated the sign that would actually be in what was originally approved towards the back of the project. And they are focusing their attention on where they believe that they need the most appropriate signage to attract and add for guidance for the residents. The design of the signs, as you can see with the inset here, they are, in our opinion, attractive. Brick and then a typical topper that goes on top of them that matches the architectural standard that's being utilized throughout the development. And they're basically located about as far away from the residential development that you could imagine as it relates to this particular site. The roadway that you see stubbing to the north is the 10 lots of residential development that was approved as part of this project. All of the signage now has been moved to the far west side of the development site. The principal larger sign is at the main entry that would come into the leasing office and the amenity center, with a smaller sign there in the southwest corner of the property itself. We believe that the signage is appropriate. We believe that the amendment is consistent with good signage practices, reduces signage, but still affords the applicant to stay within the under the cap of what would be allowed if it was just RMF zoning. And it's for that reason we are recommending approval of the plan amendment as it relates to signage specifically, and then as the secondarily component of the amendment, the relocation of the driveways on the adopted site plan to match with the physical construction in the field. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Are there any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zenner, as we all recall, our neighbors here to the north and the neighbors here to the west were seriously involved and seriously concerned when this project went in, and I'm glad that Kelly's and them could reach some kind of accommodation. They had no response to any of this?
Given the notes, and I will point out I am pinch hitting for Mr. Smith this
evening. That's fine.
Based on what is stated within the report, they did have three attendees at that public information meeting, and the comments and concerns that were expressed were size and design of the signs. Initially, I think there was some other variations at the initial iteration of what was submitted to us, and I believe through the review process, and if Mr. Crockett's still here, he can address that as well. We were able to, I believe, work with the applicant to get the signs.
I truly believe if they had an issue, they would be here.
I guarantee you, and I'm very proud of my staff that they were able to resolve that if they have.
All right. I just wanted to know, but given the level of their involvement last time. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will move to public comment. Please give your name and address for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. As Mr. Zenner has stated, we are asking for a very slight increase in the total sign area. While we can ask for a much larger increase, we're not. If you've been by any of the Kelly developments, you'll notice that the signs at those developments are very size appropriate and very attractive. And that's what we're looking for here. We don't want to get just the maximum sign area that we possibly can. We want to make sure that it's appropriate for the development itself. And that's what we're asking for. Mr. McMahon, to answer your question, with me tonight is Pat Kelly and Ben Kelly, the developers of the property. And before this project came through, they actually went and met with the neighbors in one of the homes of the neighbors out there, talked to them about what the changes were, what their proposal was. I think three or four of them did show up to the public information meeting, and they did give us support for our changes. And so, yes, we have reached out to them outside of the city process and went to them and met with them individually in their homes and said, hey, is this going to be an issue? What's your concerns? What's your thoughts on this? And they had no problems with the signage revisions that we're asking for. So, yes, it is was a process with the neighbors before, and we want to make sure that we included them in this process as well, which the Kellys certainly did. So again, I believe that the proposal before you tonight is appropriate, and ask for your support, and happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Are there any questions for the speaker, Mr. McMahon?
Just a real quick comment, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank the Kellys and Mr. Crockett for going that extra mile. It makes a big difference. We had a lot of concern last time, and I'm glad that it was addressed.
Well, they took care of this one. They left me out of it. So, hey, you can give them credit, not myself.
I want to just credit those developers and agents who go that extra mile.
Absolutely. And we've built a relationship with those neighbors, and we take great pride in the fact they actually have called the police on a few instances on some activity taking place on our site that they want us to be aware of. And so we're very appreciative of that. And so it goes both ways.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any additional questions for Mr. Crockett? I see none. Thank you. Any additional comments from the public? Seeing none, I'm going to close public comment. Commission discussion. Mr. Stanton.
I'd like to make a motion if there's not any questions or comments or concerns. As it relates to case 88-2019, I move to approve the PD plan amendment.
Second.
Second from Mr. Strodman. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
7-0, motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. Moving on to our last agenda item for the evening, or last case for the evening. Case 92-2019, a request by a civil group on behalf of BCJ Investments LLC to permanently zone 0.24 acres of property to city mixed-use neighborhood, MN, from county CG General Commercial upon annexation. The subject site is located on the north side of St. Charles Road, approximately 400 feet west of Grace Lane, and is commonly addressed as 5305 East St. Charles Road. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may. As you can see illustrated here on your map, the highlighted parcel is the subject tract of land. This is actually on what would be considered the, I guess, the north side of St. Charles Road, across the street from the parcels that we had considered at last two meetings ago. The three parcels, I believe it's these three that are here, that was requested to be rezoned at our meeting two meetings ago. MN zoning is what we're looking for, or the applicant is requesting. We held a public information meeting on this on 3/26. There were 11 postcards mailed, advertised on 4/2, and we sent out 11 property owner notifications as well. Aerial oblique, which does show you the context in which this parcel is presently located, with some commercial development that we have, vacant commercial and zoned development, and then the interchange with 70 St. Charles, and all of our commercial development that we have in this particular area. Talon Drive, existing R1 zoned mobile home park inside the city of Columbia, and some additional residential development here to the west on St. Charles Road itself. The particular site is, as indicated, it is just less than a quarter of an acre. It is zoned County CG, which is similar to our city MC zoning district, which is our mixed-use corridor commercial. The property is surrounded, as you can see here on this map, by county planned commercial zoned land, which is in commercial use. That's to the east and the south, and then to the west is the R1 zone property utilized as the mobile home park, and to the north is additional county CG zone property. And the majority of the area that is zoned CG in here in this particular region is not developed. However, the infrastructure is in place for development as demands and the transportation network maybe is improved to accommodate that. The property, from a zoning perspective, we've evaluated in a number of perspectives, as we do with most of our zoning requests. And first of all, we look at how does the zoning that they have requested, the MN district, correlate with our current city comprehensive plan, and then how does it correlate with the East Area Plan, which this property lies within. Columbia Imagined identifies the property as a commercial tract of land, and as we've discussed previously, our commercial zoning designation doesn't specifically call out what commercial zone, but that could include MN and MC as appropriate uses. And then the East Area Plan also identified this particular tract of land as being identified for future commercial use. The MN zoning does appear to be consistent with the surrounding zoning the surrounding uses, and given that a MN zone would be considered appropriate in a neighborhood zoning or a neighborhood district to serve its residents, the site seems to have those characteristics that it is adjacent to residents or areas that could develop for future residential use and be appropriate in that respect as well. Comprehensive plan identifies our future land use goals of trying to create walkable and connected communities. Not all of the standards of our comp plan apply in all instances, of course. In this case, the four policies of our livable and sustainable communities goal are applicable. In summary, those policies are support diverse and inclusive housing, maybe not applicable here, but the MN zoning district would allow for mixed-use housing options, support mixed uses, facilitate neighborhood planning, and then promote community safety. It's our belief that all four of those general goals are applied to this property. Policy two, specifically of supporting mixed use,
addresses the need to establish these commercial nodes in close proximity to existing residential or planned residential uses in the future. This particular request would have the opportunity to do that at a neighborhood-based scale as a zoned, as an MN-zoned parcel, unlike what we have previously discussed with our MC zoning district being normally more automobile-oriented and directed and generally located more along our existing commercial corridors. This is off the interchange, as we discussed in our prior request. And if you recall, as part of that prior request, we had concerns with the MC zoning. The ultimate outcome, however, if you recall, of the prior request was the commission, after evaluating the potential interchange location for the extension of Stadium Boulevard, concluded that the piece that was proposed to be MC, which was the northernmost piece, was appropriate given what may happen in the future, and that it, while it is adjacent to existing R1 zone land, that R1 zone land is not developed. And the commission did recommend the MC component of the request to the south, but then took the MN for the two westernmost parcels that went further away, given that they got closer to the residential community. This is a little bit different. We're adjacent to existing developed residential. We are in the same general area. However, it may be impacted by future road improvements, which we do not know fully what that timing may be. But we do identify that the requested MN is compatible with the surrounding residential uses and is consistent with meeting the goals and the objectives of the comprehensive plan. So with that in mind, we believe that the requested MN zoning on the property is appropriate. It does accommodate the existing use that is within the building. MOF, as we point out in the staff report, is an alternative if you are uncomfortable with the MN. However, as we are recommending, the MN zoning to us does meet the criteria that we believe is appropriate to be utilized, and therefore we find that the MN is proper. The applicant is, applicant's agent is here if there are questions, and I am more than happy to answer any if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Are there any questions for staff? I see none. We will open up the floor for public comment.
Good evening again, Commissioners. Kevin Murphy with the Civil Group, offices at 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. I'd like to say we respectfully disagree with staff on the zoning on this. It's currently full-blown commercial in the county. As you may have heard on the previous cases we had further to the west and south of here, there are major arterial roads, collector roads, and stadium extension, an expressway would meet at this extension, and it would not be a linear development. It is a nodal development, and we feel MC is more appropriate, but the issue at the moment is that our client has a failing sewer system and he needs to connect to the city sewer, and we didn't want to take the chance of fighting for MC, which we feel is appropriate, and decided to go with MN, which staff would support. Other than that, I think it's pretty straightforward. If you had any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Are there any questions for this speaker? Mr. Strodeman.
I'm assuming the MN zoning will accommodate your client's use?
Yes, their current use, what they have right now. So.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? I see none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commission discussion. Mr. Stanton.
As it relates to case 92-2019, I move approval for MN permanent zoning.
Second.
Second from Mr. McMahon. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Mr. Strodeman.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
7-0, motion carries.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That concludes our cases for the evening. Moving on to public comments. Are there any comments from the public? Seeing none, we'll move on to staff comments.
Well, here's what we get to talk about. Do we want to have a meeting in a week, or do we not? We are tentatively scheduled, and it is teed up on the calendar, the city calendar, for a supplemental work session of the Planning and Zoning Commission on the 25th at 6 p.m. in Conference Room 1C. Based on work session discussion this evening and comments that have been made, staff has received direction for making and investigating some additional topics, which we could come back and bring to you as it relates to hours of operation for liquor establishments and things of that nature, if that is state or locally defined. We can bring back to you the topic as it relates to the MN zoning district and potentially having further discussion as it relates to that and its locations that may be available in the future. Not that that stems from a discussion of potential future conditional use standards that may be developed. Or we can suspend any additional supplemental meetings. And staff can clean up the draft that has been presented now on the 11th and under tonight's work session agenda and prepare for advertising a May 9th public hearing. The option is left to the commission. These supplemental work sessions were prepared or were identified as a necessity to ensure that we had enough time to talk, and as we have discussed within the work sessions, while we can discuss a tremendous amount within the work sessions, there may be little that will be changed as a part of the final draft that will be presented for public hearing. And if it is of the Commission's belief that any additional discussion short of a public hearing that will then allow you to state on the record your thoughts as it relates to particular provisions within the proposed draft that staff has prepared may not yield any additional results. We're more than welcome to not having the April 25th meeting nor having the May 2nd meeting, which has been tentatively also reserved. I need to know what your opinion is as a commission. Do you want to have additional discussion? That additional discussion, again, maybe on topics that we will come back to after the May 9th public hearing. Once council has received a document that they then can take their action on, which the commission's recommendation, again, is a requirement before council can take action, or we wait to make any additional discussion on this topic until after council is finished with the regulatory standards that have been presented to you over the last two work sessions, and we just come back to you with whatever the end result is and then trying to address the comments that were made at the April 11th meeting, which really talked about adding conditional use standards in under certain circumstances. I am open to whatever the commission would like us to do. I need to know, however, because we do have to produce an agenda for this, and if I can't produce that agenda tomorrow, I'll be more than happy to. If I don't need to, it frees up my work day for something else.
Can I simply ask for a show of hands if any of the commissioners would like additional discussion, work session discussion time? Or does it need to be more formal?
I'd like a formal thumbs up vote as it relates to that. I don't know if it needs to be a motion.
A thumbs up? Yes.
That may be about as formal as I want to get.
Ms. Burns has a question.
Would the other commissioners be willing to pick one of the two dates, either the 25th or May 2nd? And I would say May 2nd because that would give staff time to come up with additional information for us to consider. I would prefer to have more time.
What particular information are you wanting?
You were going to clean up the draft, I think, and take comments into consideration.
Very little cleanup to the draft will need to be made.
Okay. And so what about incorporating comments that are received during the work sessions?
Comments that will be received during the work session are actually going to be reflected in the correspondence to council. And that will be as a result of your public hearing on May 9th.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Mr. McMahon.
I will certainly go with whatever you guys want to do, but I think it would behoove us, given our workload, to get ahead on the CUP, conditional uses, and the MN, at least to lay some groundwork. But if you guys don't want to do that, that's fine.
I'm sorry, get ahead on
conditional uses. If we could have a discussion on conditional uses, have a discussion on whether MN will work or nay, I think that'd be great. If you guys don't want to do it now, that's fine too. because we might have to rehash it anyway after the 9th. So I'm of a mind with Commissioner Burns to go with one date and discuss it. But if you guys don't want to, you're going to wait and do it later. Okay. That's fine, too.
I have a question of staff. Mr. Zenner, in lieu of this evening's meeting, do you feel like you captured enough of our comments through your draft that you presented today?
I think what we have received up to this point, and for those that may be watching in TV land or what will be captured in the minutes, we understand from the Commission's discussions from the 11th and from this evening's meeting, there is concern and there is disagreement as it relates to the staff's proposal of a distance and separation standard of 1,000 feet from the restricted facility types. And that it is possible that you would like consideration of something less, as well as there are some security-related or aesthetic issues that came up this evening, some clarifications in how we have particular standards drafted that deal with aesthetic design requirements. The time restriction is another issue for dispensary facilities within our MDT zoning district. There was discussion as it related as well to the requirement of a second story in the MDT zoning district. While we have captured that and the minutes from the April 11th meeting are 9 pages single-spaced, we have not produced those. Those would have been produced for the 25th meeting for adoption. We have a record of what the Commission has stated, and up to this point, my belief is, based on our conversation that we've had, those are public hearing comments. The draft, as we have stated within work session, is the draft that will be proposed, minor these very limited changes of some clarity. Substantive changes to the ordinance at this point will not be incorporated. They will be added as a part of your public hearing testimony and offered to council for their consideration as amendments at their public hearing. So I am of the opinion that any additional meetings, short of what Mr. McMahon is suggesting, that we get ahead of the conditional use process that, as we discussed on the 11th, due to the time constraints we are under, we cannot do an adequate job in order to develop those, can potentially wait. However, as Mr. McMahon said, I am at the Commission's bequest. If you would like to begin that discussion, it is a related topic, but you must understand that that will not be incorporated in any draft that is presented for a public hearing. We are not at a point that we can adequately vet that, and I believe, as we discussed this evening, if the Commission is working on proposing an amendment, our much more deliberate process of how we go through conversing and coming to a consensus is what would generally apply. Right now, we're being asked to take action on an ordinance due to a compressed time schedule. If we have additional meetings, I don't think that we will yield anything additional out of it. We will have more public comment that you will have to put onto the record again. So with that, I would probably suggest that there is not a need to hold the April 25th or the May 2nd meeting. We can prepare to advertise for May 2nd meeting for a May 9 public hearing. We will advertise for the May 9 public hearing now, or prepare for that.
I would concur with Mr. Zenner in that I believe we have discussed conditional use and then just on the topics that Mr. McMahon raised. And at this point, I would prefer to wait and see how it passes City Council before attempting to develop those points further.
All right. If I may, I don't mean to interrupt you, but a thought, we expressed a willingness and even scheduled 2 additional meetings. We may need another meeting in the future once Council gets through. Just, you know, a separate standalone.
Fully, we've stated several times that this is something in process and this is the first iteration.
All right,
and yes. But I think we're providing comment on this draft that will be taken into consideration by council. We'll see what comes through council, and then we can move forward. Additional comments? Thumbs up vote on whether or not we need supplemental hearing. Or so, sorry, I'm looking work at my sessions. Notes. Supplemental work session discussions.
Oh, you looking for a motion and we vote on that?
I'm just making a motion, yeah.
Okay.
I would make a recommendation that we do not hold any additional work sessions until after we hear back from City Council.
Second.
Second by Mr. Stanton. Discussion? Seeing none, thumbs up vote. Unanimous.
Thank you very much. So, you do not have a meeting on April 25th. You will have your next meeting, however, will be May 9. And on the May 9th agenda, we will have the public hearing for medical marijuana regulations. That will be advertised 15 days in advance of this public hearing, and we will have available to the public the draft. It'll be probably placed out on our website a little bit earlier than we would normally publish our agenda because we will have the material ready to produce. You have a couple of other cases, however. We have a preliminary plat, and this is for Arbor Point subdivision. This is just to the actually east of what we approved for the Tuscany project today. This is just north of Alpha Hart Lewis School. We also have a rezoning request, and the name James Harris may sound familiar to some of you. This is down off of St. Charles Road towards Keene. Mr. Harris just recently annexed in a piece of property, and it was zoned A. He has acquired some additional property to the front of his 10-acre tract that was formerly in the county, zoned PD, part of the former Terrebinth planned district, planned unit development, and he is requesting to have that zoned to A to incorporate into his larger tract of land as well. And then, of course, we have the public hearing for medical marijuana. Just so you're familiar with where the locations are, this is the Arbor Point project. The Tuscany project is just off the map. It's right over here. And then, of course, the two parcels for Mr. Harris with the roadway frontage out on St. Charles Road. And these two parcels that are highlighted in the teal would be combined with his 10-acre parcel through a separate platting action. To allow him to have just one continuous parcel of property and address a couple of utility issues that have arisen due to utility lines being off site or having to cross over existing property lines. Those are the items that we will have on the May 9 agenda. At this point, we are going to be preparing for our presentations by our allied departments of Public Works, Parks and Recreation, and Utilities for the May 9th work session to go over the CIP, the draft 2020 CIP, and you received in your work session materials the link to the draft CIP. If you would review that, come prepared with questions. What we have experienced over the last several years where we've had our speakers come in is somebody, one of the front speaker gets a lot of time, and by the time we get to the end, we're rushing to get through. I am going to try to give them a little bit better guidance to keep those presentations down to probably the high points of the projects that are maybe within the 1 to 2 year that we intend on having built, and possibly be very selective in the 3 to 5 and the 6 to 10 year. Window, so we're not having a full litany of projects. Parks and Rec always has a lot to share, and then we have a lot of other really cool projects in our other departments that we just don't get to hear about. Again, as we've done in the past, the whole reason for our review of the CIP is to provide council a perspective based on what you all see coming through on the development side. Are we missing things? Are projects potentially out of sequence? I realize it seems like an exercise in futility every time we ask you to do this. You are obligated to do so under the charter, but it is also, I think, something if we are consistent in providing the perspective every time we do this, at some point, I optimistically hope that it will have an influence that maybe we need to rearrange a project because you guys are seeing something or you're sensing something's being missed as we're building the environment out.
That's my soapbox speech for you all. All I have to say is thank you for being here this evening. Thank you for the discussion we had in work session. And we will look forward to seeing you then on May 9.
Thank you for the soapbox discussion, Mr. Zenner. Mr. McMahon.
Have we migrated to...
We are to Commissioner Cummins.
With that, I have a brief thank you to the press. I appreciate your all's focus on these issues of late. And I have a motion.
Please.
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
Second by Mr. Stanton. We are adjourned.